Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. It's been a while since we've chatted with Nancy and received her marvelous book recommendations. Nancy is the author, of course, of the whole Booklust series. We've interviewed her whenever any one of those books has been released. She is a regular commentator about books on National Public Radio's Morning Edition. She has been a librarian. She has won many awards for her work. She's been a bookseller in several cities in this country. And she has read more books than anybody I know. And it's just, I don't know how she can read as many books as she does, but she reads a lot of books. And she gives marvelous recommendations, and we're just privileged to be able to have her as our personal librarian on this show. It is President's Day, so we will start probably with some books about presidents. But she'll do fiction and nonfiction. She'll give you recommendations of children's books, books for adolescents, books for travel, books for history. You name it. Nancy is an incredible resource. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Kathleen. It's so nice to be on your show again.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Happy President's Day, Nancy.
You too.
You know, the book that I've told so many people about, and we interviewed her because of your recommendation, and everybody loves it, is that Destiny of the Republic book. It's a wonderful book about somebody we just don't know very much about, and you were right on with your recommendation. I've told so many people, please read this. Nancy said you should read it, and everybody says thank you when they're done.
Oh, yeah, it's a fabulous book. Candace Millard's, I mean, I think this is her second book. Her first book, of course, was about President Theodore Roosevelt's trip in the Amazon down an uncharted river with his son Kermit after he lost his election for presidency the second time. And it just it's called,
Destiny of the Republic. Oh, no, wait, the first one. No, I have it down. I got it. The River of Doubt.
The River of Doubt. Oh, yeah. Gosh, I don't know why that always goes out of my head. It's a wonderful title, too. But she just is able to make whatever she writes about just so interesting. And without talking down to people who don't know anything about the subject, she just tells you on everything that you need to know to really appreciate it. I'm a huge fan.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you are, because now I am and many other people are as well. It's one of the reasons we like you so much, Nancy. It really is. The book that I read in the last couple of weeks, which I think you would like if you haven't already read it, is this guy was fascinating. I knew peripherally about John Brown, but Midnight Rising, John Brown and the Raid That Sparked the Civil War. I know you like history. Tony Horowitz's book about this fascinating, pretty wacky character and his importance in history. It's very well written, and what a story.
Yeah, it's on my shelf. I can just turn my head and look at it.
Oh, really?
Right by where I'm talking to you. And I have not read it yet, although I have to say he's another writer who I just pick up everything that he writes as soon as it comes out because he's such an interesting writer. This one I was a little put off by the topic.
Right.
And so I'm eager to read it, especially now that you've talked about it. But it was a book that the topic alone put me off a little bit.
Yes, I understand. His take on it is interesting because he really believes how it was of vital importance, really being the spark for the Civil War. It just is filled with all kinds of detail about Frederick Douglass and all these, John Wilkes Booth, so many fascinating characters who were involved in this incident in some way.
Wow.
Which is, and he's a great writer. So I'm with you, though. It's kind of gory at times, but who he was is also interesting because he was a kind of a disturbed guy in some ways,
uh-huh.
But was able to attract lots of money and lots of influential support. So I think it's good. Who's your favorite president, ma'am?
My favorite president for reading about, I have two favorite presidents for reading about, and one is Franklin Roosevelt, partly because I think there are just so many great, great biographies of him and of that period. And then my other favorite is Theodore Roosevelt, for the same reason. I think because Theodore Roosevelt was kind of a larger-than-life character, and the books about him, I mean, it's very hard, if not impossible, to write a dull book about Theodore Roosevelt. And I think David McCullough has become so well-known, justifiably, in the last maybe decade. But before that, he wrote some just outstanding books, and one of those books is called Mornings on Horseback, and it's the story of the young Theodore Roosevelt as a child and then right up to the time he's elected governor of New York when his first wife dies. And it's just, people who read McCullough know that he can just tell a story fabulously well, and this one is particularly interesting. It's always been one of my favorites. But I have to say, the book I'm looking forward to the most this spring is, the fourth volume in Robert Caro's just amazing, many-volumed biography of Lyndon Johnson.
Oh.
So you have, if you can get Robert Caro on the show,
okay,
to talk about, this is his life's work, really, is doing these biographies. And this is a perfect time to start with the first one and just read your way through. Lyndon Johnson, whatever you might think of him at any particular moment in his career, is just a fascinating character. And you couldn't have invented a fictional character who was more interesting than Lyndon Johnson. And Caro does him total justice. These are amazing books. And okay, I can't wait for the new one.
All right, good. I did on your recommendation, and my husband wanted to see it. I haven't read the book, but I know that you like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the movie, and you said it's very, very good. The book is better. I haven't read the book yet.
Well, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is my favorite Cold War spy novel.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's certainly my favorite Cold War British spy novel, and I especially like spy novels that are based on reality, and this one was structured around the case of Kim Philby, who was the ultimate British spy, high up in the Secret Service in MI5, working since he was in college, working for the Soviets and the Kremlin. And he was scheduled to be the head of MI5, and just in the nick of time was discovered to be a mole, and that didn't happen. But it really, John le Carré just understands so much about that shadowy world of, the infinity of mirrors that you find in this world of spies. So it's my favorite book. It's a very, I think it's not an easy book. It's the action is there, but it's like the movie, difficult to puzzle out.
Mm-hmm.
And it really starts, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy starts in a place that is going to become, it starts at a moment that you're going to understand later in the book, but you're not going to understand it for a while. So you just have to go with him and trust him as a writer.
Hmm. Yeah, it was interesting for us. We went to the movie theater, and the person who owns the theater came in front of the audience and said, I advise you to pay very, very careful attention to this movie, or you may have to come back and see it twice, or maybe three times. I thought, nobody's ever introduced a movie like that before.
Well, that's so funny, because when we went here, the guy taking our tickets said, now pay very close attention to his glasses.
Oh.
He said, when they change, you know that the time period has changed as well. And nobody had ever said that to us either.
Oh, that's interesting. we both have this affinity. I kind of like spy novels, too. I haven't read very many of them, but I remember in high school writing a short story about a spy, an American spy in Russia. I don't know what intrigued me about that. It must have been growing up in that particular period of fallout shelters, et cetera.
Right.
But give us another recommendation of that kind of genre.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Probably the best American spy novel. There are two special favorites of mine. One is pretty easy to find. One is a little harder to find. The first one that's easy to find is called The Last Supper, and it's by Charles McCarry, McCarry.
Okay.
And all of his books written around the period that The Last Supper was written around, which is the 70s, I think, are just wonderful, and they all deal with the possibility of a Russian agent in the CIA.
Oh.
And they're fabulous. So that one is pretty easy to find because they've reprinted that pretty recently.
Okay.
The other one is harder to find, and it's by David Quammen. And he went on, this is his second or third book written in the 60s, and he went on to a great, it continues in his great career of writing now about natural history. But this book is based on a real case of two defectors who came to the CIA. The first one came and said, there's a Russian agent high up in the CIA. Somebody is going to defect in a few months and is going to tell you that everything I say is a lie. And somebody did defect in a few months and said everything that he said was a lie. And James Angleton, who was the head of counterintelligence, I believe, at the CIA at that time, ripped apart the CIA trying to find the mole.
Uh-huh.
And so the book is called, and it's fiction, but it's called The Soul of Victor Tronco, and it's V-I-K-T-O-R, Tronco. And it's labyrinthine. It's very much, in my mind, like Tinker Tailor, in the sense that it's so intense. And, oh, my gosh, it's one of my all-time favorite books.
Oh, my, Nancy. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad we talked about that. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have tons of people on the line
good.
Already.
Oh, good. I love it.
Good. I'm glad you do. Boyd from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Before I get off on just some books, in regards to President's Day, I'd have to say still the best president this country has ever had is Abe Lincoln.
I agree.
I know he's been mentioned a few times on your show here and there.
Oh,
Kathleen.
Really?
Yeah, you seem to bring him up from time to time.
I know.
It's really interesting. Yeah, I like it. I like it. And you, but I recommended last week Taft 2012, and if you haven't read this, Nancy, I won't give too much. I haven't finished the book yet, but it just gets better and better. It's a very satirical book about what is going on in our society with the political system and also with, you know, a lot of the media and what have you, and how, but also I think this person is sort of like, you know, William Howard Taft's time has come, you know, albeit 100 years later, because it definitely, you learn a lot about him. And so, you know, I'd recommend that to anyone. When you mentioned James Garfield, I still want to read Destiny of the Republic, but two other books I know of that deal with that topic is one is called Dark Horse, and that's all about the assassination of Garfield. And then there was this really good artist who did these graphic novels called The Treasury of Victorian Murder. His name is Rick Geary, and he did, his book was called The Fatal Bullet. And that dealt with the assassination of Garfield. So I throw those out there. I guess what I'm interested in, Nancy, have you, with me reading Taft 2012, have you read any books on William Howard Taft? And if you have, can you throw some our way?
Well, I read Taft 2012 as well, and just found it thoroughly thoroughly enjoyable. I have not read, I don't know, I'm sure there are other novels or biographies, I'm sure there are presidential biographies of Taft. I have not read any, but thinking about fictional biographies of presidents, there's a wonderful one about President Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, and it's not Grant, it's not about Grant as president, but it's Grant in the years that he was dying of throat cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wonderful. And the author's last name, I think it's just called Grant. The author's first name, I believe, is Max. And I cannot remember what his last name is. But his books, his westerns, his historical novels are just a pleasure to read as well.
Thank you, Boyd, so much for the call. Let's go to Linda in Wanakee. Hi, Linda.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you today?
Fine, you?
Good.
Good.
Good. I don't know if she has an answer for me, Nancy, but a number of years ago, Gary Giddens wrote a biography of Bing Crosby up through the 1940s. And then he was going to write the rest of his life, and it's never come out. Do you know anything about the status of that book?
I would assume it's not going to come out. I think that, I mean, I know that there have probably been books published more than, well, Robert Caro's books take a long, long time between books because his research is so prodigious. But I don't know that there's going to be another one. It kind of reminds me of, I believe it's William Manchester's biography, wonderful biography of Winston Churchill, several volumes biography, and he died before he could finish it. So it's just sometimes that happens. And maybe somebody else will take up the challenge and finish it.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Linda. I read a biography, a well-written one about Bing Crosby. He was an interesting, and the older I get, the more I love his voice. But he was an interesting man, complicated man.
Yes. Yeah, I think people who can really show us the complications, well, when the caller talked about Bing Crosby, I just, for some reason, flashed on this wonderful book about the five movies that were nominated for the Academy Award in, I want to say, 1968. And he just, the author just goes behind, you know, explains all of those movies, talks about all those movies, how they fit into the what place they had in sort of general ethos of the time. And gosh, it was a fabulous book. And for some reason, thinking about Bing Crosby made me think about movies rather than singers.
Well, he had both. He did.
Yes, he
both
did.
Realms. Let's go to, thanks, Linda, for your call. Katie in Burlington. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I've been reading the trilogy for The Hunger Games, and I just wanted to know just your thoughts more on that book. And then I don't come across, like, I'm not trying to come across like a prude about violence, but how do they decide what's an adolescent book and what's an adult book?
You know, that is a wonderful, wonderful question. Let me just say, I am a big fan of Suzanne Collins' books. And before she wrote The Hunger Games, the book that began, the first book was The Hunger Games, and then she wrote the two sequels to that. But an earlier book, which is for younger children, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, is called Gregor the Overlander.
Oh, sure.
And that book, I mean, Kathleen, I wish your son were that age now, because I would just say, oh, you've got to give him this book. It's absolutely just one of the best fantasies that I had run across at that time. And it came out very close to when the early Harry Potter books were coming out. But it's nothing like it at all. It just shows you the way that fantasy can be handled on so many different levels in the right hands. So I would definitely recommend Suzanne Collins' earlier book, Gregory the Overlander and its sequels. I think that the amount of violence in The Hunger Games, the interesting thing about it is that when you're reading it and you're just sort of enjoying it, because it is a terrific book, you don't realize the level of the violence in it, or the violence is terrible in any form, but this is children killing children.
Oh.
Or teens killing teens. And it's pretty dreadful to think about. So I don't know. I you know, what writers have told me is they write the books and then the publishers decide where they're going, how they would be best be marketed. And I know as many adults as children, as teens, who have read and loved The Hunger Games, and maybe that was just a publishing, a marketing decision.
Thanks so much for the call. Here's an email from Ellen from Boltonville. My 9-year-old granddaughter is visiting me today. She's a huge Laura Ingalls Wilder fan, me too, but not to her extent. She's read most of them 4 times each and is on her 10th time with these happy golden years. Do you have recommendations for this genre for her?
Oh, yes, 9 years old. First of all, let me just say I am a huge Laura Ingalls Wilder fan as well, and I was once invited to speak at the Oklahoma Book Festival, and I, you know, said, no, I'm, you know, this is in the years when I was doing so much traveling. I said, oh, I just can't do another trip, and they wrote back and said, Nancy, if you come here, we will take you to Laura Ingalls Wilder's house.
That did it.
And so how could I turn it down? I did. And then,
oh, that's a great story.
You know, went to the library in her little town.
Oh.
It's wonderful. Nine-year-old girls, historical fiction, there's a lot of stuff. If the caller wants to email me, I can, you know, send specific things. Let me just talk in general about some good books, not necessarily that are that kind of historical fiction, because it's very hard to really be as good as Laura Ingalls Wilder's books were. But Savvy by Ingrid Law is a wonderful book for that age. Great fun, a little bit of fantasy, very funny. Well, Gregory the Overlander would be great as well for that age. And, there's a novel by Meg Wolitzer that just came out about playing Scrabble.
Oh.
For kids. It's so good. Okay, I'm going to find it.
Okay.
It has a long title.
Okay.
Okay, The Fingertips of Duncan Dorfman.
Oh, that's a great title.
Yes. And that would be great. That would be a very good book to for that age. And for the historical fiction, I mean, another thing to do, I mean, there's not even a need to email me. I mean, I think you could go to your local library and talk to the children's librarian, and they can come up with a list of great historical fiction for kids that age.
All right. Ellen is going to be thankful she wrote, and her granddaughter is going to have a good visit today. Katie, thanks very much for your call, and Ellen, thanks for your email. Here's our phone number. Nancy Pearl is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl, our guest, and we return to phone calls. Kristen in Milwaukee. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, this is Christina, and I'm wanting to get back to the George Washington Day / President's Day theme. And one of my favorite series to read was Gore Vidal, series of historical fiction. I think
yes.
that he just did a great job with those, and they're such a so well-researched and well-written that it's just a great way to dive into American history.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yeah, I totally agree, Christina. Those are just fabulous. My favorite, I think, is Burr.
Mine as well.
Yes. And Lincoln is a close second. But Kathleen, you'd probably reverse those in that order.
I would say Lincoln was my favorite and Burr was my second. Yes, of course, I would reverse it. But they're very, very engrossing novels. They're just, and as you say, Nancy, they're so well researched that you know that there's a great deal of truth, which is good when you're reading that kind of work. All right, Kristen, good suggestion. Who's your favorite president?
I'm going to have to go with, I think just because of the wealth of content he can generate, is Jack Kennedy.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
It was a fascinating period, I guess, being as someone who was considered Generation X, it's become such an iconic figure mm-hmm. that it becomes interesting separating the actual president with the myth of the president. So to me, I find that really fascinating as a historical character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Christina, for your call. Tom in Fond du Lac, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, Nancy, do you ever give up on a book? Do you finish every book you start?
Absolutely not. I finish, in fact, I would say I probably start at least 10 books for every book I finish.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, and my belief, strong belief is that it is silly to slog your way through a book you're not really enjoying. And remember, if you put a book down and not like it, there's always the option of picking it up again when your mood has changed or you think somebody else has suggested that same book to you. There are many, many reasons for picking up a book, but the best reason for putting it down is simply that you're not enjoying it. And that's that rule, my rule of 50, I call it, is has just worked for me superbly well. So at any point that I'm reading a book and I get annoyed at typos in the book, or that the author, the authorial tics or something just doesn't sit right with me, I'm getting a little bored, or the writing isn't up to what I want to read, I return it to the library. I put it back on my bookshelf. I just wait and see if my mood changes.
Mm-hmm. And mine is, if I read a couple paragraphs and I find that I have to read them again, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, ooh, we're in trouble with this book.
Yeah, right.
I don't like to be bored. You can't be bored reading a book.
And a lot of times, mine is just pure annoyance, because I can't stand typos. Or I was reading one book, a British novel, and I just really tend to enjoy this writer because they're just entertaining. And they talked about the son going to the University of Harvard. And I thought, was the editor for that.
Right.
So, yeah. But I do. I just feel so strongly that we're so attached to the notion of finishing what we begin that we just do ourselves a disservice.
Thanks, Tom. Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. You were talking about presidents a bit earlier, and now you said Franklin Roosevelt was one of your favorites. I'm reading a book right now. It came out just a few years ago by M. Stanton Evans, and it's called Blacklisted by History, The Untold Story of Senator Joe McCarthy. And what's interesting is that he's maintaining that many of the things that McCarthy said in time have proved to be true. Propaganda broadcast to Europe during World War II to different countries, they would have people who were basically spouting the communist line. In Poland, for example, as opposed to that of the Polish government in exile in London, it was apparently communists in the American government who got us to stop supporting Mihailovic in Yugoslavia and support Tito instead. That there were communists in government, like in our government, who were cutting off American support to anti-communists in China and in other parts of the world.
All right, Hugh, we got a lot of calls here. What's the name of the book? What's the book?
It's called Blacklisted by History.
Okay.
By M. Stanton Evans, and it came out in 2007.
Okay.
And many of the files that have come into public in the 1990s, after the fall of the Soviet Union and so forth, indicate that the so-called innocents, that victims of McCarthy, were really spies.
All right. Thank you very much. Have you read that, Nancy?
I haven't, and it's hard. McCarthy ruined so many lives.
Right.
And it's very hard for me to read anything objectively.
Let's go to Anna from Madison. Hi, Anna.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am an avid reader and also teach English at the Technical College. And a number of books I've come across through you, Kathleen.
Oh, great.
This year, Linda Barry's What It Is, absolutely extraordinary, just a mind-bending book, and it's a combination of graphic novel, memoir, cartoons, and a freeing of creativity. And I've used that in my classes, and students have just loved it. It has done amazing things to them. It's just really cool. Jonathan Foer, I think that's how you say his name. Jonathan, is it Jonathan Foer?
Uh-huh,
the writer of Moonwalking with Einstein?
Yes.
Oh, what a brilliant book that is. I am absolutely convinced that guy could write about making wallpaper paste. and make it fascinating. I was kind of, I was tremendously humbled because he's just like in his early 30s, I think. And it was that book was such reach, and it's such a great approach to as the subtitle says, The Art and Science of Memory. And the last one is one I just picked up, and I didn't get it from you, but I got it from National Public Radio. It's I'm not going to remember the one. I think it's Mickey Finney, Head Off and Split.
Hmm.
It's a book of poetry. It won the National Book Award this last year, and I heard her, happened to catch her reading a poem, and it will make your hair stand on end. It's so good. And I'll leave because I'd be interested to hear what Nancy has to say, but my last thing is that another great Cold War spy novel is called Judgment on Delchev, D-E-L-P-C-H-E-V, and I don't know who wrote it.
D-E-L what?
I think it's D-E-L-P-C-H-E-V.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call, Anna.
Wow. Well, Moonwalking with Einstein is by Joshua Foer, and he is Jonathan Safran Foer, who wrote Incredibly Loud, a movie that's nominated for the Oscar.
Oh, have you seen that?
No.
Are you going to see it?
I'm not sure.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I'm just not a huge movie person, and so going is... that I have to invest a lot in.
You'd rather stay in and read a book.
Right.
Okay.
So that's what a great family. Three brothers, all writers. And that's so Moonwalking with Einstein is by his brother, Joshua Foer. And Linda Berry has a brand new collection coming out. It's either coming out or it is out. It is out, called Everything, Collected and Uncollected Comics from around 1978 to 1982.
Hmm.
So that would be a good one.
Okay. Thanks, Anna, for the call. Mary in South Milwaukee. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My book is The Letter in the Bottle by Karen Liebrich. It's a true story. A woman finds a bottle on the beach with a letter in it. It's very long in French. When translated, it's a mother pouring out her feelings about the death of her 13-year-old son.
Mm.
And when you're done reading the letter and you've dried your tears, you want to know, is this woman okay? How did her son die? The woman who translated the letter goes on a search to try to find her, but, of course, can't. She writes a book about it.
Mm.
It's later translated into French. And the mother reads the book and contacts the author. And so in the end, all of your questions are answered. And in the meantime, the author goes on this wild goose chase trying to find her. And there are times when I found her research to be silly or boring. And I would recommend to anyone, if they lose interest in that part of the book, fine, skip it. Go to the end where the mother meets the author to find out what happened, because the mother's story is so moving and so beautiful.
Mm. Mm. All right. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Rich in Rhinelander, I'm finishing Sue Monk Kids, Traveling with Pomegranates, a mother-daughter story, and having read The Secret Life of Bees, well, let's just say that Traveling with Pomegranates didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm wondering if Nancy has read it, and if so, what did she make of it?
I have not read it. I have seen the book, but for some reason, because I've been picking up other books, I haven't read it.
Okay.
Sounds good, though.
How's your book?
Well, my new project, it's gotten a little bit of a detour because I'm curating a series called Booklust Rediscoveries, which is reprinting a dozen of my all-time favorite novels from the 1960s to the 2000s, and the first, to about 2000, and the first one will be out the first week of April, and it's called A Gay and Melancholy Sound by Merle Miller, who actually wrote a great biography, and it was the book he was proudest of, or happiest with, about Plain Speaking, an oral history of Harry Truman.
Oh.
But this is a great, just my favorite novel of all time.
A Gay and Melancholy Sound.
Yes.
That's your favorite novel of all time, Nancy?
I think I could make a good argument that it is. Yes.
Oh.
Just wonderful.
Well, then I have to read it.
You do.
All right.
You do.
I will.
I don't think you'll be bored.
Okay. Heaven forbid.
Yeah, right. Heaven forbid.
Marianne in Wausau. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Marianne.
I recommend The Imperial Cruise, A Secret History of Empire War by James Bradley. He's from Wisconsin. It's well documented. He had his major in college of in Asian history, and his parents wondered what he was going to do with it. And if you read his three books, you know this is his third book. Have you read that?
I have not read that one. I read his earlier books,
uh-huh.
And really liked them. But this one sounds good to me too.
It's Theodore Roosevelt and Taft, and Roosevelt's daughter, and
mm-hmm.
It's an excellent book.
Yeah, I read that, and I'm remembering it. It is a great book.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Marianne.
I always enjoy your program.
Thanks for your call. We have a couple lines open. They have been very packed. Nancy Pearl is our guest. Book recommendations this hour, 800-486-8655 is our number. Kathy in Triple Oak County. Hi, Kathy.
Oh, hi. I have a suggestion for the grandma with the kids that have run through the house, Little House books. There's a great author out here, Ann Pawlowski, who has books about growing up in this area. And they have the same kind of flavor and, you know, pillow fight or fights with all the feathers that they're supposed to be making pillows from and all kinds of things in it. And it worked really well for my girls when they had kind of overdone that Little House book. And it was fun because it was a connection right here in West Central Wisconsin.
All right. Thank you very much. I can't find my notes from last hour. We were talking politics last hour, as we always do on Mondays at 9. But the book came up, and I can't remember. It's a new book on Clarence Darrow. Farrell is the author, or John? Who the heck is the author? I can't find it. Are you familiar with that? It's a new book on Clarence Darrow, who is also a fascinating
guy. Oh, yeah,
guy.
He's a fascinating person, and I have not read that book.
Okay.
But it is the kind of book that, I mean, Clarence Darrow is one of those people who's so complex that you could read many books about him.
Yeah.
And it would be so interesting. I wanted to say that I remembered the name of that book about, because the Academy Awards is coming up.
Yes.
Really, really good book to read.
Oh, okay.
It's called Pictures at a Revolution, 5 Movies and the Birth of the New Hollywood.
Oh.
And it's by Mark Harris, and it is about the 5 nominated Best Picture Awards from 1968. So it was The Graduate, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner,
oh.
Dr. Doolittle, Bonnie and Clyde, and In the Heat of the Night.
Oh.
Which are all great movies.
Yes.
I mean, what a year.
What a year is right. Whoo.
Yes, and this book, I mean, it does what I like, which is place things in context.
In the Heat of the Night, we just saw that on television the other night on some movie channel that we get it. That was a great movie.
Oh, yes.
It was
oh, yeah.
Movie.
Fabulous.
Yeah. All right, let's pause for a moment. Nancy Pearl is our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls. Martha in Michigan. Hi, Martha.
Hello. Thank you for your show. I especially like these kind of shows about books and stuff because I got some of the best books I ever read from listening to your program.
Oh, great.
And one of them was The River of Doubt, and the other one was Destiny of Republic, written by that wonderful writer, Candace Millan. Now, I'm wondering, to ask your guest there, has she written any other books?
Well, Destiny of the Republic just came out last year, so I would suspect she's working on a new book, but it's not ready. It's not ready yet.
And all the research that goes into that.
Yes.
She has it in the back of the book. It's just a great book. And, you know, I started reading that book. It was interesting when you said you start a book and you don't like it, and so you put it down. And I try not to do that, but I'm reading the book by Steve Jobs. Now, did you read that one?
The Walter Isaacson's biography of
him? Yes.
I'm on the list at the library, but I haven't gotten it yet.
Well, I started reading that, and, you know, I just didn't know too much about him, and I wanted to buy the book, so I got the book from the library, and I'm reading it, but that might be one that I'm going to put down. It's pretty technical. It gets really technical, and I'm not into that electronic, you know, and all that kind of stuff. The size of the book. I mean, that's enough to...
It's a big book. Right. It's a big book.
Any other really good, like that book that I read, Destiny of a Republic, I thought that was just a great book.
All right.
And this is what's interesting. When I talk to people, and I'm a librarian at church, but I would love to have been a librarian. But when you talk to kids, even, you ask them, well, do you know who Garfield was? Well, they don't know.
Right.
So I have a friend who's a history teacher, and I said, you let your kids do a book report on that book, because I think it'll inspire them to read, and it'll just be a wonderful thing for the other kids to get a hold of. And so he kind of like, yeah, you know, that's a good idea, so I think he's going to do that.
All right, Martha.
Good. Yeah.
Good. All right, books along those lines for Martha.
I know I've mentioned David McCullough books.
Right.
But you know, those would be, any one of those would be good. The Path Between the Seas, about the building of the Panama Canal, is just wonderful as well. So, it sounds like what Martha really wants is, I think what we all want, is just readable, fascinating books about interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Stacy Schiff is a wonderful biographer. She did a terrific biography of Vladimir Nabokov's wife, Vera.
Mm.
And it's just called Vera, V-E-R-A. And just reading that was just an amazing experience. Going in and reading the book that I know you like, Kathleen, as much as I did, the Doris Kearns Goodwin biography.
Yes.
A book about Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
But her book about Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt is just wonderful. And going through and reading some of the biographies of Eleanor Roosevelt, and she's another one, just the more that comes out about her, the more we find out about her, the more we read what an interesting woman she was. Amazing.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was.
Yep.
Martha, thanks so much for the call. See, you made that book enormously popular, that Destiny of the Republic. We're selling that out all over the place. Lisa in Madison, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, Lisa.
I have a 7-year-old daughter who reads at a 3rd to 4th grade level, and I'm looking for book suggestions for her that are kind of topic appropriate, but not too, I don't know, it's hard to say.
Right. No, I understand. I wrote a book called Book Crush, which is recommended reading for kids and teens, and it's divided by ages. So that would be a really good book, I think, to start with and just browse through to see what looks good for that age. And then let me just think something. I know that I have many books in my head about this. Oh, a really, really good one that's just out that a lot of people are loving. I've had one report from a 9-year-old boy who just loved this book, called The One and Only Ivan by Catherine Applegate.
Okay.
And it's about a gorilla who's in a kind of, he's not in a zoo, he's in a carnival.
Hmm.
And never really seen any other gorillas but him, and it's told from his point of view.
Oh, I want to read that.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Then there's a really wonderful book called Secrets at Sea by Richard Peck, about a family of mice who decide to follow the owners of the house that they live in America, follow them to England, where the human owners are going to hopefully in hopes of marrying off their oldest daughter. But it's told from the mice's point of view, and it's absolutely, it's just a delight.
Great.
And then,
thank you so much.
Those are really wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Lisa.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. She's got another one in the background.
Yes, right.
Cam in La Crosse. Hi, Cam.
Hi.
I'm
on the road, so I don't remember the author of this book, but it was called Neptune's Inferno, and it deals with the naval battles fought around Guadalcanal in World War II in 1942. one of which was a terrible defeat for the U.S., and the others didn't go very well. And the book, we've gotten to the point where we can, historians can look critically at some of the decisions made by American commanders in World War II, and not just say, oh, they were all terrific. And so it was, and it's very well written, very exciting to read.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask Nancy, what do you think of e-books?
I think that e-books certainly have their place, and all the books that I'm doing in this series, the 12 books, are going to come out both in print and as e-books and as audiobooks, in fact. But I find that I just do not enjoy reading e-books. I read them because I have to when I'm traveling, and I don't want to carry a lot of books. But I just really have found more and more and more, the more I try to read them, that I really want a book in my hand.
I'm with you. Is it because we're old?
I hope not.
Yeah, you're pretty with it about all kinds of things.
I love Twitter, and I do. I love technology and what it can do for us. I think it's just an aesthetic, position that I'm taking, and I wanted to just love them because of the convenience.
Yes.
I'm finding that I just really put off reading books that I have downloaded because I just don't want to face that electronic device.
I'm the same way, and I have, I don't know if it's just so many years of doing the same thing, but sitting and you take a pencil, and...
Right.
Because I don't want to mark anything with pen, but I do mark things, and then I'll go back and I'll read them out loud, and it's just so ingrained in the way that I read for work, the way that I read too, that I just can't do it on an electronic thing.
And I mean, some of the things that you can do, I really think are interesting. Like you can see what passages other people have underlined. I mean, that's has a little bit of interest for me to do that,
right?
But it just seems to be just so uncomfortable in some fundamental way for me to read those. So,
on the other hand, I'm sure you know more people than I do in this realm. A lot of people absolutely love it.
They do, yes, and you know, goodness knows it is very, 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 very convenient.
Right, right.
And you know, you can't get away from that. And yeah, I think it's purely aesthetic.
Right.
I refuse to believe it's because I'm old.
Okay.
Or you are.
Okay, we're not old.
No.
We're not old. Thanks, Cam, for the call. Chris in La Crosse, hi.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Many good presidents listed this morning, and I have to add that we are forgetting the great Thomas Jefferson, of course, who...
Right.
Not only a great philosopher, just great president altogether, and... kind of laid the groundwork for what our country stands for. And one fabulous biography I've read by him is by the now late Christopher Hitchens, and it's almost like it's a pretty simple book, actually, but a great read and about a great president that I definitely think needs mention on President's Day today. And
well, I
can take
say,
any...
The interesting thing about Roosevelt is that... about Jefferson, is that every generation writes its own biography of Jefferson because he was such an important president, and so he's an influential thinker, and they kind of reinterpret his life in light of whatever the prevailing mind zeitgeist is. So there's the biography of Roosevelt that was many volume biography of Roosevelt that was written during the Roosevelt era, and it's so different from the kind of standard biography by Dumas Malone, which is I think 6 volumes and fascinating. But I love that the presidencies can be, the different presidents can be reinterpreted in that way, are reinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chris. We have a very short period of time, Ruth, but we wanted to get to you from Madison. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Ruth. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to switch topics, but I'm a very big fan of Donna Leone, Inspector Brunetti series, and I've read all of them. And I'm wondering if Nancy can give me a recommendation for other...
Okay, we have about 30 seconds, Nancy.
Okay, Michael Dibdin's books, D-I-B-D-I-N, would be good. There's also Andrea Camilleri would be another good. They both set their books in Italy. And while they're both not set in Venice, they set them in many different places around the country. They're both good too, but I agree. The Brunetti books are fabulous. I totally agree. Mm. And another wonderful book set in Venice. You have to read the books. They're not mysteries, but they're wonderful historical fiction by Sarah Dunant, D-U-N-A-N-T.
And we have to say goodbye.
In the Company of the Courtesan.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Nancy Pearl, our guest. And you can check out all her recommendations in her Book Lust series as well. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks for all of your calls. And thank you for listening.